Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this morning's Yarchei Kala from Neely. The theme is relationships, and we have a very appropriate speaker on relationships. This is Rachel Zimmerman, an LCPC. She holds a master's degree from the Illinois School of Professional Psychology and Clinical Psychology. Rachel has a background in cognitive behavioral therapy, trauma work, and EMDR. She is a dynamic presenter on boundaries, abuse prevention, and healthy relationships. In addition to her work at Upward, Rachel works with a variety of issues in her private practice, including body image, depression, and anxiety. She is also a Kala teacher for Daughters of Israel. And without further ado, here you are. And
you can. Thank you so much. I always like cringe at the word dynamic in my bio, and I'm like, I guess I'll let you guys decide at the end, am I? We'll take a vote if that word gets to stay. We're going to mess with the microphone a little. Okay, amazing. I do like to move around. I will try to project if I do. Good morning, everyone. I know it's not easy always to get up on a Monday morning to come here. I really appreciate it. I've been looking forward to giving this speech for a while, ever since I agreed and gave it a title. Because it's a subject that's near and dear to my heart. One of the things that, you know, before we get started, the thing that's not in my bio that I think makes me that very interested in this topic professionally and also personally is that in the past 5 years, I've been doing a support group for Upward Community Services. That's a support group for parents of teenagers with anxiety and depression. And I have seen a lot in my own private practice. A lot of the work that I've been doing has been around support for parents or family members with a family member with a physical illness, a mental illness. And so a lot of where my brain and has been going lately, and then watching my own family grow up, go into next stages, all of these different things. So all of these things combined have made me very interested in the past few years in doing a lot of reading, a lot of like looking into how do we think about our role as parents? How do we define that? How do we identify ourselves? And then ultimately, because I'd like to believe that every part of our lives, how do we use those questions, those successes, and those challenges to bring us closer to Hashem? So that's what I'm here to talk about today. I'm hoping we can, you know, at the end of it, if that we can all feel that we have some very tangible takeaways to feel that we could get closer to Hashem through this role. So I'd like to start by actually, this is a sitter slash sefer I bought in Eretz Yisrael, but a lot of people have. It's called Anani. It's a book of different prayers and tefillos for special occasions, they'll call it, for your wedding day, for Friday night, for your children, for your husband, for livelihood, for all different types of things. It's in Hebrew and English. I'm going to read the English to start. And this is this is a parent's prayer. May it be your will, eternal our God and God of our forefathers, God of Abram, God of Yitzchak, and God of Yaakov, that our children be those, and if I am yet to have children, my future children, who will radiate Torah, who will be healthy physically and mentally and of fine character. May they occupy themselves in Torah for its own sake. Grant them a long and good life. Let them be filled with Torah, wisdom, and the fear of heaven, and be beloved to you and their fellow human beings. Spare them from the evil eye, from the evil inclination, and from any distress. May they have alert senses with which to serve you. In your great mercy, grant us and my wife or my husband a life of severity or more good and pleasant years filled with love and peace. We may merit to raise our sons and daughters to Torah, to marriage, and to good deeds. Enable them to find their match with ease so that they won't lose out to someone else, God forbid. Bless us with the ability to provide them with an abundant dowries, to fulfill all our promises to them, and to marry them off young, contentedly, generously, and happily. Give our sons and daughters good and righteous children who will be a credit to all of Israel, and may they continue to serve and fear you, and to live by your Torah for many years, and be blessed with many descendants throughout the generations. May we and our progeny never desecrate your great name, God forbid. Fulfill all our hearts' requests for the good and health, success, and goodness. May we, our children, and our children's children, enhance the honor of your great name and your Torah forever. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing before you, eternal, my rock and my redeemer. So when I read this the first time many years ago, and I remember thinking, wow, this is all I could want. This is everything. This is like, let them be happy, let them get married, let them have children, let them be healthy, let them be successful. It's all the things. And when I read this within the past week as I was preparing for this, I remember thinking to myself, this is setting us up for a fall. Because if we think that our children, and if our expectation is that our children are going to have all of these things, or even most of these things, we're in for a lot of pain. And it doesn't mean that we always say that we can daven for anything, and we should. We should daven for everything. And at the same time, we have to realize that this is our mother's heart saying, please, we want all these things for our children, please. And yet at the same time, it has to come with the knowledge that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in your infinite wisdom, that we know that when our kids go through life, they're not going to have the simplest and easiest of times. And even by the end of today, I might even try to convince you that it's not even always in their best interest to have the simplest and the easiest of times. And so when we daven and when we ask for things, and even just when we think about what we want for our children, we need to think about, like, what is it that we want? What is realistic? What can we daven for? And what do we know ultimately we're going to have to support them through? Because a lot of the pain of parents watching their children go through hard things is things, whether they mean to or not, statements in people's heads of, it shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't have to be this hard for my child. And interestingly, oftentimes people have a much harder time watching their children go through pain than they do themselves going through pain. And I see a lot of nods around this room, and I will nod myself, right? I remember before I was blessed with children, I remember hearing like, oh yes, to be a parent, it's so difficult. And I, you know, the young little schnook that I was, I'm like, right, so difficult, right? And then you have a kid and you truly know what it means to have your heart live outside your body in this very vulnerable way, because you're very clear right from the get-go that you're not in control of everything. And if you're not very clear right from the get-go, that's where a lot of the trouble starts, because we're not. And not only aren't we don't want to be. We don't want to be in control. One of the things you're going to hear me say a bunch of times throughout this is that Hashem gave us children, and we're supposed to parent them to the best of our ability, regardless of the outcome. Very few things in life does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, and your outcome is 100% secured if you do X, Y, or Z. And yet somehow, with parenting, we have this like fantasy world that if we do all of these things, we will be guaranteed. I had the incredible experience this year of watching my own daughter give birth to her own daughter, which I have to say was one of the most life-changing experiences of my entire life and continues to be so. And yet I thought to myself in that moment, I had thought that my heart was vulnerable when I gave birth and when I watched my own children go through life. And I still am watching my own children go through their stuff, their hardships. And yet, to have my heart outside my body give birth to her own heart outside my body, my heart is vulnerable and raw in a way that I never thought. it's so not right, because a few months after, my daughter Devorah asked me, so what is it like to be a bubby? And I said, I never knew I could worry this much. My capacity for worry and anxiety is just, who knew? I far surpassed my own expectations. And so in thinking about that as well, right, we need to think about, again, as well, two different pieces, that we parent and we daven and we love regardless of the outcome, and we'll talk more about what that means, but also that at every step along the way, as we realize more and more and more how not in control we are, as parents, as grandparents, as great-grandparents, as all of the different levels, it is such a unique opportunity to become closer to Hashem. Because it is in those moments where I read that tefillah, not to say it's a ridiculous tefillah, chas v'shalom, God forbid, that's not what I want to say. What I want to say is our intention and our mindset in going through this tefillah needs to be, Hashem, of course, as a parent, these are all the things we want, and yet we hold at the same time as we're saying it, and yet at the same time, we know that our children are going to go through trials and tribulations. Hashem, give us strength. Give them strength as we go through those things as well. I have an issue with parenting classes. And to be honest, I have a really hard time sitting through pure parenting speeches these days. And I'll tell you why. And there are some that I'm very happy to. But what I find hard is that oftentimes there's this, whether it's sometimes it's actually overtly said, but most of the time it's covert. If you do A and B, then C will occur. And I'll tell you what I mean. There's a lot aimed at parents of little kids. And if you do this with your kids, if you speak very calmly, if there's no tension in the house, if everything you say is kind, if you're validating their feelings, if you're which are all amazing things. We should do all those things. Speak kindly, validate feelings. All are good. And yet at the same time, then your children will grow up to be healthy. And inadvertently, there's a message in there. And where that gets us is I'll give you two different stories that show why this is possibly or potentially dangerous. I actually used to give a lot, but still do give parenting classes on abuse prevention and how to talk to your kids about abuse and boundaries and what words to use and how to build a relationship with your child that can weather all of the different things that could come your way, right? And I firmly believe in all those things. I had a parent approach me after one of those speeches, and she said, you know, Rachel, I've been listening to you and to other parent, speakers for a long time, and I really feel like I did all the things. Like, I talked about bodies, and I talked about boundaries, and I would ask questions and identify who she should go to in every setting, and I have to tell you that, unfortunately, when my daughter was towards the end of high school, she disclosed to me abuse that had occurred when she was in junior high. And I was devastated. I was devastated, obviously, that happened. I was devastated for the pain she had gone through. But what really, after we kind of dealt with the initial aftermath of her disclosure, what really got me was, where did I go wrong? She let this go on for a few years, and she didn't tell me. Does that mean that I wasn't the open parent? Did that mean that I didn't teach her enough? Did that and ladies, the answer is no. And I think we all know that. But inadvertently, sometimes there are messages that come across that say, if you do A and B, you will get C. The other place where I see this, especially in our community, very profoundly, is when it comes to raising children that want to stay and live the Torah lifestyle. And I find that too many speakers, that when they speak about this, make it seem overly simplistic. I don't think that's the intention. And I love all of the different suggestions I hear from different speakers about making the Judaism in your home a joyful thing, about, making it seem like it's not overly rigid, about making sure that that children have a relationship with God first and foremost, all of those things. But what inadvertently happens is that when parents, and there's a lot of parents, go through the process of watching their child choose a different lifestyle than the Torah lifestyle, besides for the pain of that, comes along with the pain of looking backwards. What did I do? Did they hear me that one time I was like anxious that Friday afternoon and like was frustrated about having to like cook for so many people and make Shabbos? Was that it? Was it that they heard me talking about how it's hard to, you know, to wear skirts or to cover my hair? Like, what was it? Did I not show enough joy? Did I not, you know? And that's not right. We are supposed to try our best. One of the things that I find the most scary and yet the most liberating is, you know, and I'll show you a book that says this, you know, over and over again in a few minutes, is that we parent regardless of the outcome. We have to parent as the parents we want to be and be confident in. We have to parent that way. We have to grandparent that way. And yet we have to know that the outcome is never guaranteed. And that's incredibly important. The other thing that a lot of these parenting classes inadvertently do with these covert messages is to almost create a society or a community of which people look at others, God forbid, and say, oh, wow, look at the kids in that home. Look at that child who didn't choose the Torah lifestyle. What's happening there? And I wish that weren't so. But all the people who come to speak to me talk about the judgmental, awful comments that come their way, right? And imagine their own pain, their own judgment, and then the judgment of others. In my support group at Upward, you know, we have a lot of, you know, teenagers who have acting out behavior or school refusal behavior or anxiety attack behavior. And oftentimes they'll talk about that one of the hardest parts for them as a parent is feeling like everyone else is judging them, whether it's the school, whether it's other parents, whoever it is, whether it's their own neighbors. So we have to think to ourselves that parent, and I think anyone in this room who has had the incredible merit of parenting a child knows that it is one of the hardest tasks we will ever have in our lives. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we all felt that we were bonding together to support each other at all times, as opposed to feeling that others are judging us, which is often the case, right? And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave each one of us and each one of our children their own unique challenges. So we're going to judge people for that? How? Why? So that is my issue with parenting classes. And again, I don't believe, and I have seen a lot of more parenting work that comes with this, you're going to do X, Y, and know that Z may come or may not, but that doesn't mean you did X, Y incorrectly. And that's what I'd love to see more of, and that's what I'd love for all of us to believe ultimately. And I do believe that this ultimately strengthens our relationship with Hashem. Because if we really believe these things and feel good about ourselves and feel confident, then we will know that, see, Hashem gave us our challenge and our job is to do the best we can with that challenge. We are not graded upon success. And I don't even know what success is, to be honest with you, especially in the parenting role. One of the things that I feel like as my own children started leaving the home, started making their own decisions, started making lots of different decisions that make me like go to bed early with like anxiety because, you know, as the kids grow up and they get older and they start making life decisions that you're like, oh, do you realize that could like affect the rest of your life? I mean, I don't know how many of you have done this. How many of you have fast forwarded 10 years of your child's life? I'm like, if you do this, then do you know what's going to be then, and then in 20 years from now, right? And like, I've actually made the mistake of saying that to one of my children, and he's like, are you serious with me right now? You're already telling me where I'm going to be at 30? And I'm like, but you don't understand if you don't. He's like, thank God, at least my children are able to call me out on my stuff, which maybe is a good sign. They're like, whoa, mom, okay, I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call you back when you're feeling a little bit more. I'm like, thank God you guys. Maybe call your father and then talk to him about this decision and we'll talk again next week. But one of the things that we started doing once things started getting real, once things started being like, oh my gosh, the stakes are really high, or at least it felt that way to me, is my husband and I started a chavrusa. And once a week, and I brought this because I wanted to show it to anyone who wants to see it afterwards, It's the Beis HaLevi on Bitachon, and it goes through the Shaar Bitachon. It's in Hebrew and English. I mean, it gives basically the different things in Hebrew, and then a lot of all the commentary is in English. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And one of the things, as a cognitive behavioral therapist, that I will tell you is that the messages we give ourselves, the thoughts that we put in our own mind, end up directing our reaction to things in the future. The more you flood your brain, you know, the whole idea of like positive affirmations, and people roll their eye at those, or like there used to be like on Saturday Night Live, like Stuart Smalley, and like I'm good enough and I'm smart enough and doggone it, people like me, and that whole thing, and people make fun of it. And yet, from a cognitive psychological perspective, what we do, even if we don't believe these things 100%, when we read things, when we say things to ourselves, when we have self-dialogue, we actually are creating neurotransmitters in our brain that allow us to have that thought. It's almost like a path in the forest. That like there may not be, there's a path that's well-worn, the path that says, I can't do this, this is going to be bad, at 30 he's not going to be okay. That's a very well-worn path in my brain, right? But we can create new pathways by saying things to ourselves, even if we don't believe them 100%, so that the next time something happens, that pathway is already created and so much easier to access. The other thing I did, which I love, is that there is a WhatsApp group on Daily Bitachon that has thousands and thousands of people. And again, I can help people access this if they'd like. And it's a Sephardi man who's not a rabbi from New York. My sister-in-law Dina is on it. She's nodding in the back. And for like, he has this like huge, I think there's thousands of people on this WhatsApp group. And every day he sends a 10-minute message. And that message is all about Hashem's got your back. Now, he reads psukim, he reads different things from different sources. It is Torah-based. But more than that is him yelling in his heavy, heavy Brooklyn accent. Don't be a yo-yo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the world. Okay, I'm a bad Brooklyn accent. I should try harder, I know. But like, I listen to this. And even though, you know, he says people complain that it's the same thing every day. You know what? I need to hear the same thing every day, because every day I forget that Hashem is in control of the world, and I worry about this and I worry about that and I worry about this. And I need reminders. So flooding your brain, and these are two things that I have done, and people can do lots of different things. I work with someone that has decided every day to journal, and her journal entry is a letter to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a daily basis. And it's just free-flowing. The things she's worried about, the things she's hoping for, the things she's grateful for. But she said she feels so much closer to Hashem. Some people had to have a conversation. You know, I was once in Parenting Vod with Rabbi Dr. Jerry Loeb, which was one of the best things I ever did in my life. And I always used to talk about, like, when you're in the car, if no one's in the car with you, even if you have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, turn off whatever it is you're listening to and just talk to Hashem. Use that time. You're in the car anyway. Right? We need to infuse, because otherwise when we get so worried, we don't connect that with, and now we get closer to Hashem. And on a psychological level, there have been so many studies that show that no matter what, you know, obviously we're coming from a Jewish standpoint, but if we're taking it, some people are like, okay, yeah, that's what from people say. And yet, in purely, completely unconnected to religion or Judaism, studies that have been done, spirituality, a deity, being connected to a higher power, are all seen to be factors in people's lives that create better contentment, better degrees of happiness, gratefulness, and overall feeling of like being okay with your life. And that's all from connection to Hashem. We're told that we're supposed to, in whatever way this means, emulate Hashem. Is there no other way? Is there no other thing, I think, that really shows that we emulate Hashem in our role as a parent? Because I think to myself, and obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is my way of getting close to him in terms of personification, which we're allowed to do, even though we know that Hashem is not human. But I think to myself, wow, Hashem must, like, on a daily basis be like, okay, these are my children, and I've created this amazing world for them and given them this guidebook on how to go through this world in the best way possible. And yet still, they do this, they do that. Like, I can almost imagine that Hashem, like, in the same way that we're with our children sometimes, like, how is this happening? How can this be? This wasn't, is that not exactly how HaKadosh Baruch Hu must feel, even though I guess he has the luxury of seeing to the future, right? But, like, I feel close in that this is the ultimate parenting piece that brings us closer to emulating Hashem. And I'm very into imagery. And I find that to be very comforting when I think, like, when something's happened with my kids and I'm like, I'm not sure I can get over the pain of this. And then I think, I don't know, Hashem does this all the time. And we're supposed to emulate him. And yet he still shows us love. He's still ready at any second, you know, to take us back, to say, I forgive you, to give us everything we need. I can't do that? Okay, I guess I can. Right? And doing those things make a really big difference. As I was preparing for this, those of you who know my husband maybe appreciate this story. I said, Svi, can you help me? I need like different sources on like the pain of being a parent. And my husband's like, I don't really give shirim like that. I can give you gematrias. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm really looking for. And he's like, okay. And he's like, Rachel, just look at the words in Chumash. Just look in the words of Tanakh. You don't need anything more. And I was looking, my husband helped me add in some of these. But even just like, and we know that nothing is included in Torah, in Tanakh, that we're not supposed to learn from, right? Think about, and I'm just going to go through these stories a little bit. Cain and Hevel, right? One son killed another, and their father was still alive at the time. Can you imagine the pain of that? Avraham, I mean, we'll leave Yitzchak to the side for now, thinking about Yishmael. How hard that must have been as a parent. He wasn't convinced, and he had to listen to Sarah in order to, like, kick him out of the house. And I'm overly simplifying, but I'm trying to get to the point of, like, when we think about the way life is supposed to be or the way parenting is supposed to be, we look back at our earliest origins and what does supposed to be mean? Because there's a lot of pain in parenting from where I'm standing. Yitzchak with Esav. I mean, I find that story particularly compelling. Here you have Esav, who had already married. And there are some midrashim that say that the reason he was blinded was because of the smoke from the Avodah Zarah of Esav's wives. And yet, he so much wanted to give him the Bechor. He believed in him. He wanted him. He's going to be good. It's going to be okay. I think of that as an ultimate parent story, a parent heart of like, I want this. I love my children. Yaakov, thinking through what he went through with his sons, and he knew they were fighting. He knew they didn't love Yosef. He knew, you know, all of those different pieces must have caused a lot of pain for him. You know, even thinking about, you know, and I'm sorry to use this sort of triggering word, but even thinking about Dina and the rape of Dina and what happened to her and what in the story afterwards and what happened to what her brothers did after that. Thinking about Yaakov Avinu and his perspective on that. Aaron and his sons being the Kohen Gadol and like the stature of that and the community of that and then watching his sons. You know, I also asked my husband, I'm like, what about in Tehillim? What do you think? And he's like, Parak Gimel. The whole point of Parak Gimel, and I just want to mention it really quickly, because give me a minute, I just want to read the first few lines of Parak Gimel in English. A psalm by David, as he fled from Avshalom his son. Hashem, how numerous are my tormentors, the great that rise up against me. And then he goes on to say that, like, but Hashem, you are my salvation. Hashem, you will always be with me. Can you imagine what it must have been for David to know that he was being sought after to be killed by his own son, and yet he still wrote a psalm to say, Hashem, I love you. I know you're with me. I know you'll protect me. I know this is your will. I know all of those things. While his own son was coming after him. I mention these stories as a comfort to say, parenting is vast and wide in terms of where it goes, what can happen. Please God, none of our children should come after us to actually kill us, you know, like, but that's the ultimate of like parents, you know, will come to me and say, my kid said to me yesterday that they hate me, that they never want to like be near me, that I'm the worst parent. My kid came to me with all of the different like things I've done wrong to them over the years. And I think, right, because that's what kids do. Now, depending on what developmental age they're at, right, it's very appropriate for kids to push away. If anything, I get very nervous and I end up seeing a lot of young adults in therapy in their 20s who are very happy and content to stay at home and aren't starting to push away, right? We want that. We want people to push away. You know, how, what, hopefully without a I hate you would be great, right? But there's just this comfort in knowing that, like, right, we know that being a parent is so broad and vast and comes with so many different difficulties, and we don't have to look very far in Chumash to find that. Last week, was it last week or 2 weeks ago? I don't know. Do you find the summer weeks sort of like meld together? All of a sudden you're like, blink, hey, it's snowing again. right, welcome to Chicago, right? But travel is still crazy in the summer. So it was the beginning of like the last week of June, and I'm supposed to be going actually up to upstate New York to be doing trainings for camps for their staff in abuse prevention. So I'm on the plane, I'm on my way to Newark, and I had heard there were storms, but like, hey, we took off, we must be fine, right? Mid-flight, all of a sudden they say, we're circling. I'm like, because New Jersey has put a hold on their airspace. And I'm like, okay, we're circling, that's okay. And then all of a sudden they say, we're going to run out of gas. So we're going to land an hour south in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'm like, oh, don't worry. We're just going to fuel and get back up. Famous last words, right? So they land. And I will spare you the whole story bit by bit, though I'm really good at telling it. But basically, I was there for 24 hours. They wouldn't give me my bag. They held us all, like, they, like, literally held us all hostage in the gate area for, like, at least 20 of those hours. That, like, we're going to take off any minute, don't leave. And I, you know, as I was preparing for this speech, I thought to myself, that, I mean, you know, as I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, there's got to be a lot of good analogies here. But the analogy of, like, parenting takes us in so many different directions that we never thought we'd be in. And if we're not open to hearing why we should be here or what we can get from it or what could be good from it. You know what's so funny? Three people said to me, oh, you were in Charlotte? And I said, in the airport? I was like, yeah. They're like, did you see the rocking chairs? And I'm like, is that a thing? I happen to have seen rocking chairs. They're like, right, Charlotte's known. They put rocking chairs throughout their airport that you can sit and rock in them. And I was like, I was so distressed and hungry that like I saw the rocking chairs and like, rocking chairs, right? Like, but like, I kind of wish now that if someone would have told me, there's nothing you can do, in 24 hours, you'll be out of here, but literally none of the crying or yelling or any of the things I will not tell you about that I did, in those 24 hours, is going to make it go quicker, so enjoy it. Maybe I would have sat in a rocking chair. And I think to myself, when it comes to parenting, right, there are so many different directions our kids could take us. That we're not going to appreciate, and it wasn't supposed to be this way, and he wasn't supposed to go down this road, and he wasn't supposed to be, you know, and I'm talking about some really hard, hard, painful things. And yet, if we could come at it, yes, we experience pain, and I'm never trying to tell you that we shouldn't pretend that it's not painful. It's painful. But if we could open our eyes while we're going through it and try to find the rocking chairs, right, and sit in it for a minute, we'd be in such a better place. So my next prop, my purse is really heavy this morning, is this book. It's called The Journey of the Heroic Parent. It's written by a man named Dr. Brad Reedy. And again, I brought all of these things so you can come up and write them down or look at it later. I have a colleague who runs a parent support group for kids who are no longer living a Torah lifestyle. And so I approached her as I was getting ready for this speech, and I said, what, are there any resources you use or books or anything? And apparently he has several. And one of the things that so Dr. Reedy had done a few different things professionally, but his main thing that he's come to now, which is with which he's writing these books, is he runs wilderness programs for kids who are struggling in many different ways for many different reasons, who can't be at home, who've hit the end of the line in outpatient therapy, many different reasons why people would go to outpatient programs. And he wrote this book. And one of the things he says is that oftentimes, parents have to come up, I think most of the wilderness programs average from 8 to 12 weeks that the child or the teenager slash young adult is there. And once a week or once every other week, the parents come up to do family sessions with them in the wilderness. And one of the things that he says he's always surprised by, he's not surprised by the pain. Oftentimes, especially in the first few family sessions, and he meets with the parents first before they talk with their child to sort of let them vent to him all of their pain, all of their disappointment, all of their, it shouldn't have been this way, I don't want to be here, I don't want to be spending this money, this is too hard for the rest of my kids, vent it all to him. And that's those are some valid thoughts, right? It shouldn't be. I didn't make my money to do this. I didn't raise my kids and put all of my like koach and effort into it in order to like be in a wilderness program because he's been kicked out of every other thing. And what he found, this is what he was surprised at, that part he wasn't surprised at, is that so many parents at the end of the program ended up saying to him, this is one of the hardest experiences of my life as a parent and as a person, and yet I've never felt closer to my child. I've never understood them more. I've never just sat with him or her and allowed her to just talk without jumping in, without giving advice, I've never felt closer. And so would I wish this upon myself? Okay, I'm maybe not far enough along in my process to say yes. But could I tell you that I'm so grateful now that I'm here? Yeah, I can. That's finding the rocking chairs. Trying to figure out what here can I at least appreciate and enjoy. It's so funny, by the way, when I wrote this speech, I thought to myself, oh gosh, this is only going to take me 20 minutes. And now I'm like, 20 minutes left. I have that problem. My husband like laughs at me because he's always, every time I prepare a speech, I'm like, I don't think I have enough. He's like, you have 3 hours. I don't even have to read your speech to know you have 3 hours. But, right, there's my anxiety speaking again. So I'd like to tell you a few different things that he talks about in his book that I really gained. I mean, again, he's the one who says, first and foremost, in every chapter of his book, you have to parent regardless of the outcome. You have to try to be separated from the outcome to be the parent you want to be. He wants us, just because our children are in pain does not mean that you as the parent did the wrong thing. Does not mean that you have to jump in and save them. That fix-it mentality, especially as our children get older, is very counterproductive. And inadvertently gives our child the message, we don't trust you to think you can manage this on your own. And oftentimes, and this is what he finds, is that a lot of the teenagers and young adults in his program say, I just want to feel sad. I just want to be angry without my parent trying to like jump in and say, do you want to do this? Do you want to do this? Do you want to try this? No, I would just like to be angry now, thanks. It does not mean that we as a parent should have done something differently in the past just because our child is in pain now. And we want to step away from the whole idea that pain should be avoided. Oftentimes, we need a lot of work reshaping our relationship to pain. I spend a lot of time in therapy with people talking about this concept, is that we have this notion that pain is bad and to be avoided at all cost. And yet, pain is inevitable. So why are we spending our time trying to avoid and brace and think we shouldn't be in something that there is no one in life that's going to escape? I remember the first time that this concept has actually hit home to me in a physical way was the first time I took a natural like labor and delivery class, you know, that's all about like no drugs and doing the thing. This is not about epidural, this is not. But I just remember one of the concepts she talked about is that if while you're having a contraction, you can almost welcome it and say, oh, this pain is here to open up my body so that my baby can come. And it hurts and I don't love it, but I'm not going to brace against it. Then actually, the muscles are not as tense, therefore do not take as long to open, not as many contractions. and you are better able to have the baby quicker. Now, obviously, that's a simplistic version. But I find that to be true in our emotional lives as well. The more we brace against pain and say, it shouldn't be this way, my life shouldn't be this hard, and the more we give that message to our child, we're robbing them. Because pain will come in one way or another. And it's not, the message isn't, you shouldn't have to feel this. The message is, whew, this is really hard. What can we do with it? Is there someone you want to talk to? And we always have to differentiate in life. And this is a huge piece of work for myself, and I think for everybody, is differentiating between two columns, things that are actually within our control and we can do something about, and things that are outside of our control. And we spend and waste so much of our precious, precious, precious emotional energy railing against things that are outside of our control. And the quicker we can get to, okay, this causes me pain and it's very difficult for me, but it's outside of my control, I'm going to choose to concentrate on things I can do with it. We move forward so much quicker and with so much, you know, they say that sometimes pain is inevitable and suffering is optional. I don't know if you've heard that saying. And I believe that this is the difference. Because pain will come, but when we fight against it, we suffer. But when we kind of step towards it and embrace it, almost like we're standing in the waves. You know, there's a lot of different therapeutic techniques that talk about pain coming in waves, like almost like we're standing in the ocean. I almost think about like that Karate Kid scene, you know, where, and thankfully I feel like I can say this in here, and maybe some people know what I'm talking about, where like he's like this and like the waves come, and that's where Mr. Miyagi is teaching him how, and like the waves knock him down, right? But the waves are gonna come. And his job isn't to be like, oh no, a wave is coming. His job is to be like, right, the wave is going to come. I need to like go with it. And that's what we need to like Mr. Miyagi this. We need to like Karate Kid this in that. The waves are going to come. Can we be ready for them? And just step in and say, no one likes it. I do not enjoy contractions. And yet at the same time, they're what brought me some of the most precious things in my life. Can we see some pain in our life in that way? We need to move away. You know, I remember I watched a video once where they interviewed parents. What's the number one thing that when you say, what would you like for your child when they're older? What shout it out. What do they say?
To be happy.
Happy, right? Everyone says happy. We need to move away from that. We need to pick a different word. We need to think about contentment. We need to talk about strength, resilience. But happy is a word that we use, and I often will hear people say in therapy, aren't I supposed to be happy? And I think to myself, supposed to? That's hard. That's a hard word. Who said that? I don't think that's a Torah concept. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't say, you follow my Torah and you will be happy. That's not a word we use. Get the most out of life, contentment, closer to you, Hashem, all of those things, yes. Feel fulfilled, yes. And those are much deeper, more real things than happiness. Happiness will come. It does come, right? We want that. Of course we want that. But happiness is almost like taking our kids to the amusement park. Well, it depends on your kid, but definitely not maybe for you. But that's not our goal, and we need to shift away from that. Another thing, which I think about a lot, is about identity. Oftentimes I find, and I will tell you, I find this more with mothers than with fathers, and I find this more with stay-at-home mothers than with people, and I say that with the utmost admiration, because I think women who devote themselves to the care and raising of their children as their full-time profession are incredible. They need to be applauded on a daily basis. Like, that is hard, hard work. And I feel like, well, it's a soapbox for another time. I feel like we've unfortunately been raising this next generation of women to think that that's not okay to be, and I have major issues with that. But again, another time, ask me back. But I find that often women who their whole life is their kids, then really struggle the most when their kids go through pain or go through different things in life. And what I say to that is,
It's incredibly important, and Dr. Reedy talks about this in his book as well, that you have a sense of identity that is not completely intertwined and I'm very visual images, like an octopus, like in all of their arms and their tentacles, like just around you. You need to feel good about yourself and feel confidence and competence and happiness and contentment and all of those things we've been talking about from other things in your life besides for your children. Because we need to know that no matter what happens with our kids, the outcome is not guaranteed. So we can't, you know, I had a mom, recently who came to me, and their child is in high school and is really, really suffering and struggling and learning disabilities and ADD issues and social issues, and their child is really having a hard time. They really are. And this mom was like doing everything and therapies and all the doctors and her whole day was dedicated, and yet she came to me hysterical crying, "I'm not doing enough." Why do you think you're not doing enough? Because it's not fixed. Because he's still in pain. And that can't be what we do to ourselves. We have to have a sense of many different things. And it doesn't, your profession or your occupation can be one thing. But there's many different things that we can do in our life. Art, writing, exercise, walking, running, cycling, volunteering. It doesn't matter what you do. It really doesn't. You know, as I'm watching my parents age, I'm watching my own identity become more intertwined with their care, with thinking about how they're doing, with thinking about which doctors they need to be going to in the upcoming weeks, right? So I can't let my identity go too close into that also. We have to be able to have a very full and be willing to build a full identity that's separate from the success, and that's in quotation marks on recording, success of our children, because the outcome is not guaranteed. We need to stop ruminating. We need to, when we catch ourselves being like, ugh, and I can't tell you, guys, this is me, ladies, this is me talking to me. We have to stop saying, if only I would have sent to that school and not that school. If only I would have taking my kids on more vacations when they were younger. If only I would have not worked full time. And then, ladies, it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy and a wish for control. Because, you know those books or those movies where like they go back and rewind and almost like, okay, and now you get to go the opposite. You know, okay, pretend you didn't marry that person. Pretend you didn't do this. And then they show you the outcome. Those books and those movies prove, and we always have to believe books and movies, right? Just because we took the other outcome doesn't mean we would have had anything so different or anything so different that we actually would have liked. We have to be kinder to ourselves and stop ruminating. Kids can sense their parents' emotions, and Dr. Reedy talks about this a lot in his book. It's such a Jewish mama thing to use guilt, whether we mean to or not, and it's almost like that's what we use. That's our bread, bagels and blocks. I mean, we need to use guilt, right? And yet, at the same time, he says that oftentimes our children react to our guilt in a way where they either will become total rule followers, behavior followers, and become way too enmeshed with your emotions, wanting to make you happy, sometimes even unconsciously. This isn't always conscious. And sometimes the opposite. I will do whatever I want, and if I know my parents want me to do X, Y, or Z, well, then I am certainly doing MNNOP. Right? And again, not always consciously. So what we do about that is we make it very overt. Our kid tells us, "Mom, I've decided to quit my job and leave everything behind and move to the desert and hope I can do well with the cacti." Okay. So, name your emotions. Put them out there. They're going to feel them anyway, right? Using I statements. I know everyone's like, oh, therapists and their I statements. But there's something very like, this is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling scared. I'm feeling disappointed for the 12 years of medical school I paid for that I put you through. I'm feeling, and this is the most important part. My emotions are my own. And as my child, you should never have to caretake for me. And that's a very important statement. I'm feeling sad right now, but you don't have to do anything different about that. Now, I can't promise you that that fixes the issue. Hopefully, sometimes kids love us and want to make us happy, and I can't promise. But it makes it the message of it, of I may be sad, I may be disappointed, I may be worried, which is making me raise my voice, but that has nothing to do with you. That's me. Right? That's like as my son was almost telling me to do on that conversation I told you about. Mom, take care of yourself and then come back. And that's what we want our kids to do because they can sense it anyway. And our kids should not be making life decisions based on our emotions. We can influence, we can't control. We've talked about that. And I know I have to start winding up. Let's talk a few more very tangible points. One of the things, we had talked about finding the rocking chairs. And so there's a skill called savoring. And savoring is when we take time to just, in the moment, enjoy what's in front of us. You know, it's almost like, when I think of the word savor, I almost think of like a dish, right? And, you know, like you eat like a really good, you know, fill in the blank for yourself. For me, it would probably be like a perfectly tender steak. Great. A little bit of salt. And like, right? That's amazing. Especially if you've paid a lot of money for it. You don't get it a lot. You savor it. A vacation, hopefully. You savor it. Parenting-wise, we need to find the moments to savor. If that's with little kids, now I admit, and I think a lot of people find this to be true too, I didn't do, I wouldn't say a good job, any job of this when my older kids were younger. And I'm having a much easier time doing it with my younger children. Where like, I used to hate putting my kids to sleep, my younger kids. I love putting my little kids to sleep now. I love reading books. I love snuggling. I love making you another bottle, even though you're five and shouldn't be drinking bottles. Dina, don't tell anyone. But that, like, there's a moment where sometimes where my five-year-old is sitting on my lap and I'm reading him a book and he puts his head backwards and I almost feel like tears coming to my eyes because I'm like, I love this. We can find that. You know, I went, my three of my older children are in Lakewood right now. One married, two are learning there. And I took a trip recently, and I took one of my sons, just him, for a few hours. And, like, we went out for lunch, and we went shopping, and, like, there wasn't usually, and I promised myself, no talking to him about the future. He's the one I'm always predicting to be 30 and not doing okay. You know, and I was just like, you're so fun when I can just enjoy you, when I can just be with you, when I can just, you have the best smile. Have I not appreciated that? You have such a good sense of humor. Have I not appreciated that? Right? Savor. And especially in those moments where we're in Charlotte, North Carolina. When you're in a place where your child is going through a very painful time or a very painful to you time, they might be okay, but you're going through a painful time with it. We need to be willing when we're with them and something happens where we're enjoying what's happening and we like almost close our eyes and say, I'm going to savor this. You know, I don't know for you who read this with your kids who were younger, but I don't know if you remember the Cam Jansen books. And it was a book about this little young detective. And as she was going through, she had a photographic memory and she'd say, click. Click, click, and then she put together all the clues at the end and solve it. Sometimes I think about that when I'm in the moment with something I really want to remember and savor. I almost say in my head, click, click. I don't even want to bring out my phone to take a picture here because it will ruin the moment. Just click, right? I want to savor it. We need to also be able and willing to bring Hashem with us into this as well. We talked about talking to him in the car. If you're going to take on something, oftentimes when children are struggling, we're told to or we want to, say extra Tehillim, say Nishmas, learn something, learn Shmiras Halashon, all beautiful. But with intention of, Hashem, I love you. I'm doing this because I want to be closer to you. I don't know what the outcome is. I'm going to say Nishmas for 40 days. I'm going to say this extra Tehillim. I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but ultimately, I want to be closer to you, so I'm using this to daven and to plead and to extra schus and all of those things, but I want to be closer. I like to use imagery. Sometimes when I'm in a lot of pain, I will literally think of Hashem with his arms around me, just holding me and maybe crying with me. Sometimes there's something called the butterfly hug, which is where we just put our hands like this and start tapping on the two sides of our arms with our arms crossed. Sometimes, right under the shoulder blades, these bones right here is a really nice place right under the bone to start tapping. And it's just, and I think, and sometimes I will start tapping here and then think of a beautiful image or a mantra and just think to myself, Hashem is holding me. Hashem is holding me. He knows how much pain I'm in. And he's always with me and it's going to be okay. And there's, sometimes I'll think to myself, and there's like this, and there is something physiologically, for those of you who have read about tapping, that like we kind of bring that message into our body in a different way when we're able to do that. We need to stop judging ourselves and others. We need to validate how hard it is to be a parent. We need to balance knowing that we parented to the best of our ability, being able to listen to our children if they want to give us feedback so that we can also grow at the same time. We don't want to become overly defensive. We need to expand our own identities, as we talked about. We need to appreciate the journey of our children are on and find the rocking chairs. We need to distrust any method or class that tells us that A and B will for sure equal C. We need to parent with love and confidence regardless of the outcome. We need to let Hashem hold us and be our partner as we dive into him. And the title of this book is appropriate. It is truly heroic to be a parent. And I am so grateful and sending love and strength and appreciation to all of the people who are on this heroic journey at every stage of it. Thank you.